1:30 sharp. We are on to the 1:15 agenda item to revise the council policies. The document is behind tab number one. Take it away, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tab number one, number three. It's a memorandum to council members from me. And at the last executive committee meeting, we discussed changes to our advisory panel, operations handbook, the policy for advisory panels, and the policy for plan development teams. If you look at the document under advisory panels, at one executive committee meeting, the executive committee wanted to get the advisory panels more involved in our committees, getting more involved and the council more involved with its APs and utilizing them more. And we discussed having the advisory panel chair be a sitting member of the Species Oversight Committee. And we all agreed that was a good idea. And then after the meeting ended, there were questions about, well, do they vote? When they vote, do they represent the committee? Do they represent their personal views, et cetera, et cetera? So we decided to bring forward a draft to the council for AP policy, and basically it's shaded, and the new change would be advisory panel chairs are encouraged to attend meetings of their respective oversight committees and will be seated at the committee table with other members. These individuals will not be allowed to vote, but may freely enter into the committee's deliberations. Input provided by the chair must be identified as discussed by the advisory panel or personal, or this is my personal input. Expenses for participation in the oversight committee meetings will be covered by the council and will be indicated on the appropriate TA and the reimbursement form. So that's basically the change, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you want to go through both of them before there's a motion, or do you want to take one at a time?
Why don't we go through both of them?
Okay. The second change recommended by the advisory, recommended by the executive committee, is dealing with plan development teams. We noted, staff noted, when we looked at the plan development team policy, it didn't spell out that the executive director appoints PDT members. That has always been the practice, and the executive committee decided that should continue the practice and should be included in the plan development team's policy. So you see that shaded section, the council executive director appoints all PDT members. Then you follow down to composition of the PDT, and the PDT has been very specific that the membership would be regional office, science center, state scientists, and scientists from academia. And those were the different categories, the four different categories of technical folks that would be on the PDT. And so at the executive committee meeting, we had some recent instances where industry-funded scientist wanted to be a member of the PDT. And so I brought that discussion to the executive committee because it's not part of our operating procedures now that industry-funded scientists or NGO-funded scientists or any scientists other than state, federal, or academia could be members of our PDT. And the executive committee decided to recommend this to you for approval. And that's a new bullet that said industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of non-governmental organizations may be approved for PDT membership on a case-by-case basis by the executive committee.
David Pierce.
Yeah, I have. Up until recently, I hadn't given much thought to our plan development team members were selected. What I have now, especially because of the recommendation being made by the executive committee as to how we should move this forward, and I'm referring specifically the shaded text on the third page of the plan development team perspective. The plan development teams obviously have a very important role. We rely on them more and more all the time to do the hard work for us, to follow up on our specific decisions, and frankly, to be creative in offering up ideas to us as to how we could improve management of all of our fisheries. As it stands with this particular recommendation, I'm uncomfortable because it says that industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of non-governmental organizations may be approved for PDT membership on a case-by-case basis by the executive committee. A case-by-case basis really provides me as a council member, all council members, with no real understanding as to what would make a particular individual industry-funded scientist, member, staff of an NGO, what would make them qualified and desirable to be on our all-important plan development teams doing all this work behind the scenes that we rely on. Plus, after reading that shaded text, I reflect back on the responsibilities of the plan development team shown on the second page, where there's a very important statement, and it's the fourth paragraph down. It says, it is important for plan development team members to be impartial as possible in evaluating management alternatives, to maintain the credibility of the PDT as an impartial body. Plan development team members should be careful not to become advocates for a particular management approach or a particular interest group. So I'm having difficulty reconciling that very important qualifier with the fact that on a case-by-case basis, we may have some industry-funded scientists and members and staff of NGOs being selected to be on the plan development team. So I would make a motion. Karen has it. I would move that the executive committee, one, detail considerations and criteria it will use when considering industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of NGOs for plan development team membership, and two, provide the council with an explanation as to how these appointments will be reconciled with PDT responsibilities pertaining to impartiality, credibility, and non-advocacy. Executive committee recommendations for these PDT appointments must be approved by the council. So that's my motion. It essentially provides for a more transparent process regarding how plan development team members would be put on. And also it brings this important decision back to the council for us to critique and approve. Obviously, we rely on the executive committee to give us good recommendations with good background, with good justification for those recommendations. But this takes it a bit farther, and I think provides more accountability and more transparency and puts the burden of plan development team membership with the suggested change into the hands of all council members.
Is there a second? Mary Beth. Laura?
I just wondered if the motion might also speak to the duration of the appointee on the PDT, such that it was for a limited amount of time.
George Darcy.
There's one other issue that actually has come up recently, and that has to do with data confidentiality of this kind of a member. It's probably something that could be worked around, but General Counsel has given some preliminary advice that data confidentiality for this sort of a member could be an issue.
Can I ask you to explain that just a little further? Where the issue would potentially occur?
Well, maybe Gene can help out here, but Yeah, typically, if there are confidential data specific to an individual vessel's fishing activity, for example, or non-aggregated data, council staff have the ability to see those, and certainly our staff, center staff, regional office staff do. But an outside individual does not. So, as I say, this just came up. I'm not sure that it's problematic. It could probably be worked around. I'm just making you aware that it has come up, and it's something we'd have to consider if you ever decide to use this provision.
Gene.
Just to expand a little bit, this is prescribed in the Madison Stevens Act about who has automatic access to confidential data, which is fairly broadly defined as the data that's collected by NIMPS with respect to fisheries and so forth. And so it's a matter of seeing to what extent that can be worked around or accommodated for different types of people that are not enumerated as being exempted from the use of the confidential information.
Paul.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As the maker of the motion, is this you don't want to get involved in the state, federal, or academic appointments, just the appointments from industry-type scientists and NGO? Or do you want all and input by the council on all appointments?
Well, I was going to make another motion after this one that's specific to the status quo right now, as you indicated before, that you, Paul, appoint all plan development team members so the burden is on your shoulders. I think that this is it was a sensible move to take it off your shoulders, put it into the shoulders of the executive committee, but obviously it's quite specific with regards to who you're considering, you know, again, the industry-sponsored people. So I'll have another motion after this that gets to the issue of all individuals who would be considered for appointment to the plan development team. Essentially, it would be that the council would have to approve all members appointed to the plan development team.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is for someone on the executive committee or Paul. Just curious, what was the rationale for adding this in, industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of NGOs on the PDT, just to clarify?
There had been requests from industry-funded organizations to have scientists appointed to the PDT, and the existing policies essentially didn't allow that. So we were looking at it and thinking about certain circumstances where the expertise that scientist could bring to the PDT would be of value in what was being worked on.
Thank you.
Jim.
This is a question of George or Gene. In light of what you just brought to us about the confidentiality, have you looked at the makeup of our PDT to ascertain if we have some people that maybe don't fit into that criteria that we should be dealing with it?
Everyone's fine.
Everyone's fine right now? Okay.
Dave Gatham.
Yeah, I'm generally supportive of David's motion, but I do think we have two competing interests here. On one side, we have the need for neutrality of our PDT members. I mean, they have to check their baggage at the door somehow. And the other issue is who funds people and how that's perceived. And I think one of the problems now is that funding stream is getting very blurred. You have academic scientists now that are funded by money that doesn't come from neutral sources, as an example. So, how do you how do you deal with that situation? I quite frankly don't know how to deal with this anymore because it's not a simple black and white thing. I mean, we need qualified people on our plan development teams, and that's been a big problem where the states and the Science Center don't have enough people to adequately staff these plan development teams. And outside academic scientists sometimes aren't interested because there's no remuneration and they can't take the time. And I think as a result that hinders the work of the PDTs. I mean, we just heard that some of these PDTs are given a task and it doesn't get completed for months because they can't hold a meeting where they can get everybody together in a room on a timely basis. So I am, I'm concerned with who's on our PDTs. I'm concerned with if the council votes on this, it could turn into popularity contests. And I'm concerned that we don't have enough qualified people to be on some of these PDTs at this time. And I'm not really sure what the answer is. I'm certainly concerned that people won't check their baggage at the door, but I'm not sure there's much we can do about that. I also believe we do need people who understand the fisheries on these plan development teams. Some of the people that come to some of the plan development teams really have no first or even secondhand knowledge of the fisheries that they're developing plans for. And that's a problem. So, I assume the intent of this originally was that if we cast a wider net, we'll get more people. And then we just got to make sure those people understand that, you've been caught in this wider net, but you have to check your advocacy at the door. And so those are my concerns anyway, and I'm just not quite sure how to alleviate them.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this motion because I think it is an important issue. I'm much more comfortable with the first part of the motion than the second part of the motion. I think the first part of the motion, because this has been raised in a couple of different instances that I'm aware of, that there is a need for clarification. In general, I second it. I'll support the motion regardless of my questions about the second part. I think that whether or not all PDT appointments come back to the council might be a little unwieldy and raises some concerns. And I think my preference would be that perhaps we consider the second part after we get the first part reported back to the council. But I do think it is an important issue, and it gets very murky, as David Gaffer pointed out. I mean, you have some people who work for, are technically with a university, but yet they're funded by an NGO, and that certainly has been an issue that's been raised before about PDT membership. So I think we do need to take a little bit more time on this, and I think there's some value to looking at the confidentiality issues that were raised as well. And as I said, I'll support the motion in whole, but the second part to me seems like would be a response to consider at the time we get back the more detailed criteria. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else from the council? Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I started out supporting particularly the first part, but I'm nervous about the second part. But the more this goes on, the more I'm convinced that I don't support the motion. Everybody, as David pointed out, has baggage when they walk in the door. And I think the best way to deal with that is within the PDT itself. There's nobody on one of the PDTs that doesn't recognize baggage when he sees it. And I think that the PDTs are, to some extent, a self-policing organization, and we want a variety of opinions, some of which will arise from industry, some from NGOs, and some from academia. But everybody that walks through the door has baggage, and we have to judge each of them individually by their performance. And I don't see how we're going to work that out through this kind of an initiative.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm supportive of the concept of the motion from the state perspective. We're losing personnel. We're losing funding. There's just plain not enough trained professionals to be on our PDTs. And I'm concerned about all the issues that have been raised, particularly about making the work products less impartial and hampering the overall effort. But this is a set of checks and balances, I think, that will allow us to expand our PDT membership, which we desperately need.
Sally.
Agreed. We absolutely need to have the opportunity to expand PDT membership, or at least maintain a steady course in terms of expertise that we have on the PDTs. My concern is that this motion, as written, would make it more difficult to expand the pool of expertise that's coming into the PDTs. I think perhaps what we need to do in what we've been talking about in looking at, in addition to industry-funded NGO staff, is consider, quite frankly, all of the PDT members, including council staff, so that they have a clearer direction about what it means to leave their biases at the door when they come into the PDT. I think that would be helpful for the whole process, rather than just looking at a select few categories of individuals. I would think that would relieve the burden on council staff if it were clearer what the criteria are for participation.
Mark Gibson and Jim.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Dave Preble made most of my points. I agree we need to expand the pool of candidates, but I think the council's current selection review process is adequate, and I also think that the current leadership and future leadership to the PDT are sufficient to deal with any issues that come up, so I oppose the motion.
Jim.
Yeah, I approve the first part of the motion because it looks to me like you're asking the executive committee to develop a criteria, so I'm going to make a motion to amend this and to remove the second part of the motion.
Is there a second to that? Tom Dempsey?
Yeah, I think it would be quite cumbersome to have the executive committee bring in each time this comes up back to the full council for approvals. So, you know, I think you've got to have some faith in your leadership that you've elected in your executive committee. So the way I would see this turning out, if this motion passes, that they'll develop a set of criteria to bring back to this council to approve the criteria. And then it would be up to the executive committee to implement that policy. And if that doesn't work, then, of course, the council always has a prerogative to change that criteria or change the mechanism of how that's working in the future. So that's the rationale. Yes.
I have Sherry and then Paul.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not opposed to this at all, but I do have a question for Mr. Darcy. In the sense of you saying that it would be NOAA Fisheries could work with the confidentiality issues with somebody on the PDT in this respect. Would that be through a confidentiality agreement like all of us have already signed, or would that be where they wouldn't be able to look at data until it was summarized up to a level where the confidentiality issues would not be of concern?
George Darcy.
We haven't gotten to that point. I was just speculating that I think there would be things, and those might be two options. Gene could add to it, but I mean, it just occurs to me that if there were an issue that involved a certain kind of data that was confidential and there wasn't a confidentiality agreement in place, that person could, you know, be recused from looking at those data in the raw form. I mean, that would be potentially one way to deal with it. That's just my thinking.
Thank you.
Paul.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. we've been, you know, the
the appointments of PDTs have rested with me for the last 15 years. And what I do is I sit down with the PDT chair, the deputy, and myself, and I ask three questions. One, what are the skills and knowledges that individual brings to the table? Two, can they be trusted to be unbiased? And three, how are they going to fit in with the other members? Those are the three criteria. And then then they get approved or disapproved. What I'm very concerned about is opening up Pandora's box. Okay, we've got an industry scientist that is on this side of the issue. Guess what? You're going to get an industry scientist on the other issue. They're going to hire someone on that side of it. So now you've added a different element to the PDT, that the PDT chair is going to be referee. And that's what I'm most concerned about, that we have a current process, it works, I think there's benefit to keeping the way it is from a staff standpoint.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaisel and Mary Beth.
Just a point of order to the maker and the seconder. Are you, it says remove the second part of the motion. Does that mean you're striking it at the two, or are you striking the last sentence? Because they say they're two different things.
My intent was to strike it at the two.
Mary Beth.
Well, I think that Paul's point is well taken, and his three criteria he's used for the past 15 years in general, I'd say that it's worked very well. However, what he just described under our current PDT membership, and I won't get specific if I can say that, there is a perception not from an industry person on one side versus the other side, that some of that may go on now, and I won't get in more, into that any further, but I think it just highlights the need that, times are changing and we need to have some criteria now, and I do think Paul's right that, in general, I'd say his criteria has worked well in the past.
Mark, did you have your hand up? Gibson. David.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'm still unclear of the seconder's intent. Is it, he said, after two? So is the seconder, is a Jim striking the last sentence where it comes back to the plan developed to the council for approval? So one and two stay as is, get rid of the last sentence, or is there some other intent, Jim?
I see the first part now, but my intention is for the executive committee to develop this criteria and bring it back to the council for its approval. And then that, upon that approval, then that's how we would move forward with appointing PDT members in the future. And that the executive committee would be the group that would appoint those under the criteria set by the council. In other words, the executive committee is going to come up with a draft in more detail than what we've got in front of you, probably utilizing the exact criteria that Paul's described.
So, okay, Mr. Chairman, so that would mean then that when these criteria are brought back, considerations and criteria brought back for us to view, part of that charge will be for you to, that is the executive committee, to deal with the second point, right, regarding how there'll be some reconciliation of these particular individuals with the responsibilities of the plan development team as stated, that is the impartiality, the credibility, and the non-advocacy that is so very important for a plan development team member to have. So that would be addressed by the executive committee if this motion were to pass as amended by you.
Yes. Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Any comments on this? Ron?
Ron Smallwitz, Fishery Survival Fund. So the motion right now, I still don't, it ends with the first sentence. That's it, the motion right there. I think we support that motion. The council needs to have a larger pool to draw from. This doesn't prevent an analysis of the individual to decide whether that person might be very useful or not. This is a scientific group, and scientists are advocates. I don't care who they work for, whether it's the government or academia or industry or stakeholders. Individual scientists are advocates for what they believe in and what they research. And that give and take is very important. Right now, we have a relatively small pool of people that we're drawing from. We're short a lot of expertise. I look at a PDT like the Scala PDT, which has about a dozen, 13, I don't even know, virtually all of them are government. And I've seen meetings where government people on the PDT were told to remember who they work for. And I've seen, so we need a larger pool of scientific talent on these groups. So I think we strongly support the motion as currently described by Jim Odlin. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, Ellen and then Gary.
Ellen Gaethel, the board of directors of the New Hampshire Fishing Sectors. I support the motion as it's amended, and I have real reservations about allowing the executive committee to make these decisions. So that would be the second part. I realize that's not what you're deciding right now. I guess the devil's in the details as to what criteria the executive committee comes up with. But I would favor the original motion that those decisions come back to the council, full council. Thank you.
Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gary Libby, Port Clyde, Maine. I support the amended motion because I think most scientists, whoever they represent, are inherently trying to do a good job. And this, I think, just the pressure from their peers will keep them honest on this. I don't think there's a big problem there. I think we do need more people that have a lot more expertise than I am, obviously. But I think that this is a good motion. I think Jim was spot on by amending it, and I support the amended motion. Thank you.
Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Support the general intent of the motion to broaden the pool and to put a finer point on this issue. For instance, this issue came up under the Scala PDT, where the PDT does a very good job, but it doesn't have all the experience and breadth of experience of members that it needs. For instance, right now, one person, and while she's a world-class scientist, on the record, she is world-class, one person basically decides how many days at sea the fishery gets. And this is, the most profitable fishery in the United States. One person shouldn't be deciding just how many days at sea the fishery gets. No matter how good of a job they're doing, there need to be other people looking at this. And the fact is, when the number is presented at the PDT, there's no one else on the PDT with the expertise to question or take another look at how that number was derived, understand how that number was derived. That's a problem. We can't just have the Oracle of Woods Hole telling us how many days at sea we get and go on with it. We need more of, a scientific discussion about how that number is arrived at. And so you need to go out and find that expertise. And sometimes it is, the fact is, since there isn't funding from the agency to provide to the PDT, and so that really limits how many people can actually show up, that have the resources or the time to really commit to the process, we need to look at broader how we can get more capable people there with the funding constraints that we have within the agency. And so then you have to open it up to outside groups to be able to bring people to the table. And yes, everyone brings baggage. But you can look at other, if you think there isn't baggage or lots of opinions and advocacy going on at PDTs now, you haven't gone to a PDT meeting. There are certain PDTs that are heavily weighted one way or the other, and with people making very specific advocacy for very specific proposals in very specific regions that, you know, they may have a specific interest in. You see it all the time. And I'm speaking of one PDT that I go to quite often. And, you know, you have members who make very specific proposals that, you know, it's nothing but advocacy. And so these things need to be brought up, fleshed out, and discussed. So this is a good beginning to the discussion. And my point, you know, for you all to take away is we need more expertise on very important issues like how basic biological assessments are done. And we also need to broaden that pool and bring in more opinions and pay attention to the advocacy that's already happening on the PDTs. I think, you know, the council needs to be more engaged on what's happening at these PDT meetings because this really is the engine that drives the whole management process. Thank you.
Anyone else? Jim.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I think it goes back to about the time that Paul mentioned there. About 15 years ago, there was a shift in the paradigm of how the plan development team work was to be done. At that time, I believe Chairman Tom Hill sent out a letter describing some changes in the way the plans would be developed and measured. And at that point, I think the PDT was assigned more of a management measure than a scientific approach. And I think currently that's where this is getting off the track. You've got people making management decisions or developing management plans with little, if any, expertise in the fishery, where their expertise is basically in the sciences. At one point, a lot of the information and a lot of the ideas would arise at the advisors' level and then proceed into the committee. And I guess we reached a loggerhead where we'd go to committee, come up with some plans that would be brought before the full council, and the full council would go into a day's debate and completely restructure that management plan at that point. And I think at that point, Chairman Hill got a little perturbed and basically sent out a letter describing the changes that he'd foresee. Now, I support the intent of the motion about broadening the scope of the PDT itself, but I think you need to take another look at what its role should be, particularly if you're going to have competing interests on there, because as described earlier, it's going to be nothing but a bigger fight rather than the smaller one that you currently have. So I think it's not who is on the committee itself. I think it's what their job and their role is going to be that needs to be better defined. Thank you.
Anyone else? Chris, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, in response to Jim's comments, there may be a perceived change in how PDTs operate in the past 14 years, but from where I sit, I really don't see that much of a difference of what PDTs have been advocating or asked to do by committees, and even pre-PDTs in terms of staff members. Before PDTs, often staff members were asked to come up with alternatives, present them to committees, and then the committees would usually send the staff or the PDTs back to the drawing boards, ask for modifications. So committees always had a very strong say in what the alternatives that were analyzed in council options. And I don't think that's changed very much since in the past 25 years.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, just to be clear that if this motion passes, the executive committee will bring, so we can add it if you want to after membership, will bring the proposal, the criteria back to the full council for approval.
Is that okay with the seconder? Mary Beth.
Just to clarify a little bit, this motion doesn't speak to whether or not we think the PDTs are doing, you know, clarifying what kind of work they do. In no way does this mean that we think, I mean, the PDTs do an incredible amount of work that support the process that we do here, and without them, we're like dead in the water. So, I mean, in no way is this critical of the work, in my opinion, that they do, or whether or not they come up with alternatives. Committees ask them to come up with alternatives at times. Sometimes the committees come up with them and ask them to analyze it. And so, in general, I support the PDTs and their work, and this is just something to help us clarify. Some people have indicated to even expand PDTs because we are asking them to do so much work. So just so we're clear on that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone else on the council? Call the question. Hey.
Yeah, it's just one part of this I'm not clear about. It says, when considering industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of NGOs, but it doesn't say NGO-funded scientists? Should it say that? I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure the exact intent of that second phrase. It says, we'll use when considering industry-funded scientists and members and or staff of NGOs. So my question here is, if you have an academic scientist, let's say, who's a member of an NGO, does that then mean that he falls under this?
Might be a contract person in our staff.
Yeah. I'm not clear what this is trying to say there. I really don't want to vote on this until I understand that.
Jim?
Well, no, I don't think if he's a member of an NGO, but if he's a staff of an NGO, he would fall under this. In other words, if that's his position, and you would fall under this. That's what we're trying to develop, to make this transparent. So I think if you let us deal with this, we can figure out a way to develop this and bring it back so that we have a clear criteria that's transparent, so everybody knows how people are getting picked for the PDTs. That's the intent.
Paul?
You could probably, where it says member, say, you know, NGO-funded and our staff of NGOs.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion to amend. Wrong button. All of those, I did 16 in favor, opposed, 1. Abstention, 0. 16-1-0, the motion to amend carries. We're now on to the main motion as amended. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Unanimous. Going back to the individual items here, we had one change to the AP chairs. The chair would entertain a motion to accept that change to the AP chairs attending the and participating in the oversight committees. Dave Preble. Is there a second to that? Is Mark? Alexander? Dis- discussion? David Pierce, then David Gaethel.
Well, with this particular approach, it seems to me that the chair of the advisory panel, who sits at the table and participates in a free-flowing way in the discussion, has a big burden on his or her shoulders, because now that particular person, I think, should be reflecting the opinion of the advisory committee at all times. In other words, when does that particular person, when does that person's views become personal views as opposed to the views of the advisory panel that that person is representing? Again, it's a big burden to place on the shoulders of that representative of the advisory panel. The way we have it right now, the chair gets up to the microphone, expresses all the views, expresses the decisions and recommendations of the advisory panel, and that's it. Then that person can speak on his or her behalf any time relative to the issues being discussed by the committee. It seems to me this might create an awkward situation, so I look to the executive committee for some further guidance regarding why the executive committee feels this approach does not create an awkward situation for the advisory panel chair and also for the committee that will be listening to the views of that particular person. Are those the views of that person or of the advisory panel? Do we have to keep asking the chair, is that your view or is that the view of the advisory panel? I'm uncomfortable with this approach.
The intent of the change was that the chair of the advisory panel would indicate in discussion issues that it was either representing, that person was representing the advisory panel's decision, or they would indicate that this was their own personal feeling on that. That was the intent, as it's written here.
Okay, with that said, Mr. Chairman, then, if indeed this passes, it puts the responsibility, gives the different advisory panels an even greater reason to be very careful with regards to who they pick to be their chair, I would think. All right. Thank you. You clarified that for me.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. When you have a committee meeting, typically you get the advisory panel summary. Usually the advisory panel meetings are before the committee meeting, and when you study those, it should be pretty clear whose opinion is what. If the representative or the chairman of the advisory panel drifts too far off in that report, then it seems like you should be able to tell. I don't see it as a huge issue. I think this is good because you'd have a liaison between the two different parties. I think it could be helpful. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
I haven't decided how I'm going to vote on this yet. This gives the chair of the advisory panel extraordinary power. I'm not sure that's warranted. I give you an example because Vito's sitting right here. He could go and on a personal basis say, I'm opposed to limited entry in Whiting, be clearly identified. But then as chair of the advisory panel, he'd have to go and say, but the advisors as a majority support limited entry. If it's that clearly differentiated, it's fine. But what I'm and I know Vito as a person, and that would be exactly what he'd do. But I'm more concerned with the case where you get into the kind of the gray area, and you can start to exert policy influence by not clearly identifying, when something may be your personal opinion, which happens to coincide with the majority of the advisors, but may not be, there may be a minority that strongly opposes that view, and it never gets communicated. So I'm not sure whether advisory panel chairs should sit on PDTs or not. I'm going to listen for the rest of the discussion before I decide.
At the moment, I have Dave Preble, and then Paul Howard and Terry Stockwell.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're talking about sitting on the committee. When we've done that with the Habitat Committee, it's been extremely positive. Having the AP chair's input to the committee has been positive. It doesn't give him any additional power as it works out. I would have had the same opinion. But it doesn't work out that way because generally what he will do is if he's asked a question about a specific thing, he will say, you know, well, we'll know what the vote was from the AP anyway. And this gives us access to the minority opinion that we may not have otherwise. And he will tell us what the range of opinions was. That's how it's worked out. So at least in my experience, it's been it's worked out well when we've put them together at the same table. And I certainly would like to continue doing that. I think it works out well. And the only real influence that he would have would be by vote, and he doesn't have it. So I support this.
Paul Howard.
I'm going to say that, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Part of the rationale for having the AP chair attend and be at the table is because given the amount of work that the PDTs are doing now and just the number of priorities and different actions, it's very difficult to have AP meetings every time you have a committee meeting and balance it in with all the PDT work itself. So recognizing what Vito said today, there's not an awful lot of fishermen on the council, and if we're not, because of time constraints, utilizing our APs like we should, this gives us an input to the actual advisors in the industry that we might not necessarily have.
Terry Stockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I strongly support the motion on the board. I view the participation of the AP chairs as a tremendous asset to the committee work. It will provide a direct link between the committees and provide some consistency. Having chaired two committees, each of the AP chairs I've worked with have very clearly differentiated between their personal views and that of the AP as a whole. So I urge folks to move this forward.
Mary Beth.
Well, I guess I'm feeling a little torn about this in that AP chairs are often people, or most often people, who also have their own opinion. So to the extent that it would compromise their ability to represent their own opinion, you may find some reluctance of people to sit in this role. But then again, as Dave indicated at Habitat, this has worked well, and I would be reluctant to say that we can't do this. So I kind of come back to the goal. What is the best way to get the input from the APs to the committees and utilize that information? And quite frankly, I think the way that the SCALLOP committee and the SCALLOP AP function does a really good job at that, and we should consider that as a model. In SCALLOPs, the AP, when they meet, always meet the day before the committee. Many committee members, or at least a few, will show up early and listen to the discussion because they're already traveling to that point. And for those AP members that come, they most often say through the committee meeting, you know, it's geographically together, time frame together, people can plan their time. When AP, you know, the AP motions come up, generally the AP chair is there, and if the committee needs any clarification, he's been available to ask questions. We need to do a better job of incorporating the AP opinions into the process. And I think, you know, just as a general rule, holding these meetings back-to-back really improves that dramatically. I'm not against the motion. I'm just not clear it does exactly what we want it to do, and I'm not sure that all AP chairs will want to assume this role.
Tom Dempsey.
I actually share many of Mary Beth's concerns. I guess my first question is, what is this what problem are we trying to address through this, and is this the best way to address that problem? My sense is that, and my recollection is that a lot of this is being driven by the management review and the recommendations from that. And the management review essentially said we want more input from the advisory panels and the industry and folks involved. I think that's a worthwhile goal. I think Mary Beth articulated some of the ways that where some of our committees are doing that quite well. And there is quite a bit of variation between committees right now. So I'm not sure that this is the way to get to achieve that objective, to achieve the objective of including more of the AP input. And I think it does raise some of the concerns, real concerns, that people have discussed before. I think before we pursue this, we'd be better served to make some of the changes or make more, expand some of the practices that that the Scallop AP currently has to other APs, and to really really firm that process up before we start to contemplate changes like this. So I think we need to think carefully before we make these changes, and I'm not entirely certain that AP chairs want this responsibility or want to be put in this position right now.
Mark Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion. I believe that oversight committees benefit from having AP input at the meetings on occasion. Part of the problem with, or some of the delay the Monkfish committee has faced, is because they've had questions where they haven't gotten answers in an official capacity from the AP. And I think having joint meetings with the AP and oversight committee is a good idea sometimes, but sometimes it's not possible, and sometimes it might be unwieldy because of the number of people involved in both the committee and the AP. So I think at the very least, having the AP chair there to answer questions as they come up related to something the AP may have done, or if we, you know, want some input from somebody from the AP, it's very helpful to have them there. I think, you know, David Pierce pointed out a few concerns. Those may happen, but as somebody stated earlier, or I think it was David Preble, you can see advocacy when it's happening. I think we have more to benefit from this than we have to fear from it. So, thank you.
Laura Ramson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would concur with what Mark said, and just speaking, knowing that Bill Gorenzer is the chair of the AP for groundfish, I feel very confident, knowing Bill personally, that he would certainly set aside any personal from what the advisory panel was recommending. But one question for you, Paul, was it's not inexpensive, the amount of advisory panel chairs times the number of meetings that go on. Is that a consideration with your budget?
All I can say is not right now.
Rodney Allen.
Yeah, I agree with the previous speakers, and excuse me. I support this motion. I think it's very important to have the AP heads at the table. And every AP that I've worked with, they've made it very clear at the beginning whether it was their views or whether it was the committee views. So I think they're right up front. I don't think anybody's brought their own agenda out of all of those. Thank you.
Anyone who hasn't spoken on this? I have David Pierce and then Dave Preble.
Yeah, at least one council member has said it's good to have the AP chair at the table, because that way we can get a constant flow of advice from the advisors on issues that may come up, options to be discussed. Well, at all the committee members I've attended, the audience has always been pretty good in terms of our having a we've had quite a few advisors present representing a broad range of opinions. And when committee members have had a question about a particular issue, they've been free to ask that question through the chair of the audience, and then the industry advisors can come forward and express a point of view. So the chair doesn't get a competitive advantage over other advisors who would be in the audience watching the chair participate in free-flowing discussion. Again, I understand that the chair has special responsibilities, but at the same time, there are many advisors who may not necessarily think that the chair is of the advisory panel is properly reflecting that perspective. So I'm more comfortable keeping it the way it is and not going with the motion that is before us.
Okay, Pavel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. The problem, I think Tom asked what the problem is. The problem basically is that we need more industry input, particularly on the effects of the actions that we take. The actions that we take may be sound from a management standpoint, but aren't always sound from the industry standpoint. And this is not the only answer. It's not the only way to get that information, but it's one portal of information from the industry. And as far as relying upon the audience, I can't tell you how many times I've had people come up to me after a meeting and say, well, yeah, I probably should have said something, but I don't like getting in front of an audience. So what this does is what and the chairs of the APs are not shrinking violets. They wouldn't be asked to be chair. They wouldn't have been voted in as chair if they were shrinking violets. I haven't seen one yet. They're very willing to say what the industry's point of view is and what the industry's needs are. So, and the audience isn't always that way. So I see this as being, as I said, one portal of information coming in from industry, and I think it's a valuable one. It's worked well in my experience with my committee, and I support the motion.
I'm going to go to the audience, Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Chair of the Monkfish Advisory Panel. Let me start by saying that I know and respect all of the chairs of your advisory panels and respect their judgment. I've been trying to figure out what exactly you wanted from the chairs to attend the meeting, and the only explanation I heard was from Paul saying that we couldn't have enough advisory panel meetings, so you wanted the chair to go there and speak for the advisory panel. As the chair of the Monkfish Advisory Panel, I cannot speak for the advisory panel unless there is a meeting of the advisory panel and I know what their position is. And I would never attempt to speak for the advisory panel or the industry as a whole. I can only speak on my own behalf or on behalf of the people that I work for without direct approval from them. I think, as you know, as many of you know, I've advocated for many, many years for better use of the advisory panels. There is no really protocol written in your in your operating procedures on how and when you use your advisory panels. It really is up to the whim of the chairman. And some chairmen in the past have never called a meeting of their advisory panels. Others, like the Scallop Committee, have historically used their advisory panels to great to a great extent and to great benefit, I believe, to the committee. So I know that I could not sit at, if I can sit at the committee table and provide a report and answer questions about the advisory panel report, but I cannot sit at the committee table and speak for the advisory panel unless they've met and I have their input. And I think it does create some awkwardness if I don't have a report to deliver, to just sit there and try to give the advisory panel position. So I guess my recommendation would be if there is an advisory panel meeting, the committee, the advisory panel chair can go to the committee meeting and give the report. I think that's pretty standard procedure. But I really hope that you will look at a more comprehensive way to use the advisors in this process. I think the model of an advisory panel meeting prior to the committee meeting has worked really well in most occasions. Joint meetings are difficult because there's so many people. But that is another way that you could possibly incorporate more input from the advisory panel. But I do think you need to have some standard operating procedure on how and when you use your advisors so that people who are appointed to the advisory panels and, you know, donate a considerable amount of time have an expectation and understanding of really how and when they're going to be consulted. Thank you.
Anyone? Vito and then Gary.
Vito Calamo, chairman of the Whiting Advisory. I think Paul Howard hit it on the head, and so did David Gaethel. David knows me very well. If it's an opinion or a vote from the advisory panel, I would bring that forward. But I am opinionated. There's no doubt about it. And that would be from me. I think you're on the right road. I strongly urge you to support this motion. I think there'll be some rough seas ahead with it, but I think you're on the right path. You need more input, and it's better for the public to see you have more input. And the openness is much better. And the expertise from most of the advisors, I think, would be a welcome reward. The only negative would be that some of the people that are chairman may not want to do this, so they may bow out. But I think you're going in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Libby. I'm a member of the Ground Fish Advisory Panel. I like the idea of having an AP meeting prior to a committee meeting. I think what this would do, if you did set the chair up at the table at the committee meetings, the AP chair at the committee meetings, you would probably see a lot more AP members there to make sure that everything went the way the AP was projecting it for it to go. And I think Maggie hit on a few good points about only being able to go through a summary and really not being able to enter into the discussion without having the whole AP involved. If we knew what was coming and we had an AP meeting, I'm sure we could discuss that. So there is ways to do this, but I do think you need more input and more use of the AP, just like she said. So whichever way you go with this, hopefully we can have AP meetings the day prior to the committee meetings. Thank you.
Tina, have your hand up. Harriet.
Harriet Diedrichson from New Bedford. My experience on advisory panels would be scallops from 85 to 99. And, of course, some chair people, they have their opinion. I don't see how you can say you've heard from industry if you don't go ahead and have advisory panel meetings. And at those advisory panel meetings, often I've seen people who are on the subcommittee for scallops attend those meetings. And I've always valued the time that those people would give to come to the advisory panel and really hear the advisors as they discuss things, because we're not all in agreement. So that's when a subcommittee person really hears what's going on at an advisory panel. Often in scallops, at the subcommittee for scallops, there is industry there, sometimes not as many as were at the advisory panel, of course. But I think if you're going to run a system here, I heard what Paul Howard said, and perhaps he's talking about money constraints, because myself, from 85 to 99, I never filled out a voucher for anything. I had a boat, I made my money fishing, and that's why I was there. But I know for a lot of people who were traveling, like from the Mid-Atlantic and scallops, I know it costs money to bring them in, but that's part of the process. If you really want a process, I really feel to just, as Maggie said, how can a chairperson, they do have some power on the advisory panel. The chair does have power, there's no question. And so to bring them to the subcommittee, and I don't know how much weight the subcommittee would give to their opinion. I mean, everybody has opinions. We don't all agree. So, personally, I think the way it is, but you do need advisory panel meetings. If you can't afford them, how can you afford to run your system? So, I judging from looking at the scallop advisory panel meetings and the subcommittee, I think you need both. But I think to send one person and sort of just not have advisory meetings, I think you're skipping something in the process, and I don't really feel that's acceptable. I think the way it is, it should stay, but you can't eliminate advisory panel meetings. That's how you're going to get industry input. So I think this there's a lot to this. It's not that simple, as David Gothel says. Everybody's opinionated, and I know on the scallop committee, there's certainly everybody is not in agreement. Okay. I think it's better the way it is than this. I would rather see it the way it is, but I do feel you have to have advisory panel meetings. One way or the other, you need them. If you're looking to get rid of them and send a chairperson, as Maggie, what can the chairperson bring you if they're not getting consensus at the meetings? Everybody can listen to something. It's like the telephone game. And then speak it again. And they all thought they heard the same thing, but something different comes out of it. They both have their value. But something that really helps is when subcommittee people have the time to come to advisory panel meetings. And when industry people take the time to go to the subcommittee meetings, that's when I think you get the truest and best result of what people in that fishery feel. So I would rather keep it the way it is than go to this and sort of, it looks like you're trying to cut rate the process. And I think to improve it, we need more industry input, and that's getting people to meetings. You've got to reach out to them, having stuff just online. You've got to send out, you know, when the meetings are going to be and everything else. I mean, there's a lot of people I've met over the years. They don't even know when the meetings are, because if they haven't come to council meetings and signed the card out there to get the information, they don't get the letters or anything. So you first have to sign that card to even be on the list to get in the information for whatever species you're interested in. Thank you.
Dave Ellerton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Ellington. I've been the advisory panel chairman for Herring for this council and for the ASMFC for more years than I can count. And I'm assuming that your motion is not intending to do away with advisory panel meetings. It's very important for us to have advisory panel meetings, and we have in the Herring fishery, as you all know, we have some very different opinions on how the fishery should be conducted and managed, and it's very difficult to get even a consensus. We very rarely take votes at our committee meetings. We very rarely reach consensus, but one thing that we do have, is a very skilled staff member from the council sitting alongside us at the AP meeting, taking detailed notes and finally producing a report which is then provided to the committee with enough detail to explain to the committee members what was actually said by who, or not, maybe not specifically by who, but it's quite often something that people can understand who made what suggestion. But it's important to have that follow-up with a detailed report that's passed to the committee. In many instances, the committee have then asked me on the following day or the day of the committee meeting to enlarge on some of the comments that are made in the report. But we've got to a point where that report is quite necessarily detailed, and quite frankly, Laurie Steele takes a lot of credit, should be given a lot of credit for getting us our opinions across to the committee. It's not clear to me as to who should be the chairman of the committee. For many years, I've often sat at the committee meeting, at the AP committee meeting, thinking, well, I wish somebody would say that they'd rather be the chairman than me. But that's the way it continues. But I don't think there's anything specific that says that we, you know, we're appointed for 3 years or 5 years. You can tell me if I'm wrong. But I think there should be something that does implement a vote or however we would consider who should be the chairman of the committee year on year or 2 years on 2 years. The Herring Committee members, I don't know that they actually make any claims for costs of travelling to committee meetings, advisory panel meetings. I certainly have never asked to be refunded for any costs of coming to AP meetings. And my strong opinion is that all those folks who do attend the AP meetings, those AP members, would come if they were not paid anyway. I don't know that there's any need to change what is existing at the moment. I wholeheartedly agree with Maggie Raymond saying that you have to have a committee meeting or an AP meeting prior to a committee meeting. We always have an AP meeting before a committee meeting, not necessarily the same day, not necessarily the week before, but sometimes 2 weeks before. But again, if that report is made out as a detailed report of what the comments are on the day, then committee members who in some cases have actually sat around the AP meeting, then those committee members are fully informed of what the AP has recommended.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Dave Gatel and Mary Beth.
I had two questions. One was if we vote for this, will this prevent us from holding joint AP committee meetings? And that's what we've done with Whiting and Skates, and it's worked pretty well. So there's nothing here that's going to change that. And the second is, will the chair of the committee, if we vote and approve this, will they basically get the same pep talk that you've just described for PDT members about what this clause means as to how they represent committee views and their own personal views? I would hope that they would.
Mary Beth.
Well, I kind of come back again to what is the goal we're trying to achieve here. And I listened to some comments from the public that we haven't really laid out criteria for when APs are to meet in the process. It is up to the chairs of the different committees. And also this reference to, you know, having the same, you know, having the AP and the committees meet back-to-back in, you know, the same location, the value of that. And I think that this is an attempt to move in the right direction, but I'm not sure it really addresses the entire issue. And I'm wondering if there would be some value to perhaps the chairs of all the subcommittees maybe just getting together for a conference call and laying out some basic principles. I mean, I'm tempted to vote for this motion and then make another motion that says, you know, to the extent practical, that all of the APs and the committees meet in the same location, if they're going to, you know, consider the same agendas. But then I feel like at the same time maybe we're starting to get down into the weeds and not being comprehensive in addressing the goal here. So I'm not going to go on any longer because I'm getting away from the motion on the table. But perhaps after we deal with this motion, we could just maybe make some, some thoughts for where to go from here.
Further council discussion. Paul.
Just will remind the council that we do have an AP policy that talks about the committee tasking the AP and giving them specific terms of reference, etc. And we also have an FMP development process as part of our handbook that calls for the council process to always use their APs in the beginning of the process, throughout the process. It shows it every time before the committee is taking direction from the council. The flow process shows you use the AP. So, you know, I mean, we can change all these processes, but it's already there. The issue is we've got to follow through. And it looks like we follow through on, I've heard Whiting, I've heard Monkfish meets with them, and Scallops, and So maybe we just got to have some additional oversight for those that aren't working rather than change the policy.
Anyone else on the council? Jim.
Yeah, I just make a quick comment. I support this motion. You know, the APAT report, there was complaints made that the council wasn't using their APs enough, and we're just trying to respond to that report and get the APs more engaged, and this is just one step to do that. I think it's just appropriate for us to move that in this direction.
I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Fourteen in favor. Opposed? Three. Abstention? Zero. So 14-3-0. Motion carries. Is there any other motion we need to address in your report, Paul? Okay. Mary Beth.
Just to follow up on what Paul said, I think he is correct in that if you read through this section on APs, it does mention many of the things that have come up in that, you know, having AP meetings and committee meetings in the same location back-to-back is a good idea. This is all very general guidance, and I think the part that is also very telling, though, it says that AP meetings will meet as directed by the Oversight Committee Chairman. And so, therefore, it falls on the chairman to follow up and make sure they're using the APs the way they need to be. And I think that, you know, again, maybe just a thought that for the executive committee that the chairs of the subcommittees to have a two-hour conference call to talk about how APs are utilized and to the extent that we can be more consistent from plan to plan and development of actions, you know, in that if we go to scoping, the APs should have a meeting. You know, prior to the committee meeting, when we're in the middle of an action, at what point is it appropriate for the AP to meet, you know, these types of things. Just a little bit more clarification in there so that people who serve on the AP understand when their input is going to be needed and maybe just to refresh everybody's memory of the right way that we should be utilizing that information.
Okay. I think we're going to move into scallops. So you're still...
Could we have a 10-minute break, Mr. Chairman?
I was hoping we could get started on it and take a break so that... Okay. So we do. We're going to do one thing, then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back. Okay.